This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us. Welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Myself, Dave Kellner here, alongside Dave Tindall and Mike Grenham to look forward to a couple of events. We're looking at the Trophy Hassan II on the European Tour and the Valero Texas Open on the PGA Tour. Good to have you with us, folks. And we'll first of all start off with a reflection on what happened last week and the Madeira Islands Open, Mr. Tindall. A washout. Not having much luck at that event, the European Tour.
No, they're talking about moving it now, aren't they? Because that's 2 years in a row where Mother Nature's just hammered them. A bit frustrating, actually. I'd had a few quid on JB Hansen. I was just thinking one of those, you might get a cheeky win from 36 holes. I think we talked, didn't we, on the podcast that the weather might be bad, but I don't think we quite expected it to be that bad, did we? We thought
they'd get 36 holes in the very least.
We thought maybe 54, but to not even get 36 is just carnage, wasn't it? There's some negativity around the event anyway because it was basically a challenge tour event, and then you sort of ended up saying, oh, what's the point? Because, you know, in theory, it's a nice venue.
Yeah.
Maybe if they moved it, they might get a better field as well. Who knows?
They're just waiting to showcase the attributes of the golf course and the island, aren't they? And hopefully they have plans to reschedule the event for later in the season, so hopefully that comes to fruition. On the PGA Tour, Matt Every, Mike, defended his title at Arnold Palmer's tournament. He was a massive outsider pre-event.
He was.
Not really done anything, had he, in the interim? But
no, his form lines were similar to mine. but he managed to get the job done.
What did you make to the Henrik Stenson incident? Put on the clock late on in the event, and then three-putted on 16 and 17. He was quite critical, wasn't he, of the...
I didn't see it, was
the
he?
The management of the situation, yeah.
I think so,
Dave.
Yeah, afterwards in his press conference, he kept bringing it up, didn't he? He just kept saying, you know, if you're in the lead, you're not holding anyone up. They're the leaders in the last round. I kind of had some sympathy with him, I guess. But I don't know. Was he implying that it wasn't him who was being slow?
I think so, and he was implying that maybe the timing of the... not the penalty, but putting them on the clock altered his mindset going into those final three holes.
Yeah, but then both of them were on the clock, weren't they? So I don't know. I think it's one of those ones if you mention it afterwards and you've lost it, it does come across as sour grapes, doesn't it, to be honest.
It does. It doesn't mean he's not right, but it does come across like that, doesn't it?
I think he was critical of the inconsistency, and someone put on Twitter that Padraig Harrington's still playing the playoff hole from a few weeks ago. Inconsistency is the bugbear of many players.
It's really... who was the young chap at the Masters a couple of years ago?
I've completely forgotten his name.
He got picked on for, you know, it was just
the young
so
Chinese
unfair.
Lad, that was ridiculous, wasn't it? What was he? He was like 8 years old, wasn't he?
And the other players, other players. I understand Stenson's point of view to some degree in that there are some players that get away with it week in, week out, year in, year out, aren't they? And never get done for it.
Yeah.
So it is inconsistent.
Let's get stuck into the events this week.
Great
then.
Knowledge of young Chinese players. That
will continue, won't it, throughout the podcast, that sort of knowledge.
I have to wear that one out, won't we?
Yeah, I think it's definitely Tian something. Let's get stuck into this week then. The Trophy Hassan II is the event on the European Tour, and George Kutsaya is the 16-1 favourite here with William Hill. Marcel Siem is 20-1, Andy Sullivan and Emiliano Grillo and Ross Fisher all 22s, Alexander Levy, David Horsey, Jaco Van Sale and Pablo Larrazabal all 25s, and it's 28s and bigger the remainder. We're in Morocco this week on the European Tour, and the Golf de Palais Royal is the host venue for this week's event. This course has been used for the last four editions of the tournament, and the winning scores have ranged from minus 13 to minus 19, and the course itself is a very picturesque par 72, measuring just under 7,000 yards. And it hosted the Moroccan Open in the mid to late 90s as well, before taking over as the host event for this championship. It's described, Dave, as a pure links course.
Yes.
And you'd suggest that getting the ball in play off the tee may be key here. It's not one that bombers necessarily have an advantage on.
Yeah, I looked at the stats of the few winners that we've had there, although, come on, European Tour, they didn't even have them for
notice that for the first 2 years.
Come on, surely. But yeah, when you did look, driving distance seemed the least important attribute to have. So, you know, I was looking at people maybe like Alexander Levy or Kyrgios. It's kind of negates their powers, doesn't it? So you're definitely looking at a steadier player. Yeah, with the links, but it's sort of plays the ground. The land is links land, but it's kind of, you know, tree lined fairways.
Yes.
You know, setting the palatial grounds, and it must be quite exciting.
I like watching it. It's a nice kind of vista, isn't it? The event, don't you think?
Yeah. I agree.
It's got those sort of walls around.
Yeah, the
it
walls and all of that. Something and a bit different. Yeah,
next to the Atlantic. Yeah, I think it's
not used an awful lot, is it? The course, I don't believe.
Well, I think the king has to open the gates to let
people play. Yeah,
let people in. So I don't think we'd have much chance turning up, would we?
No, not us, no.
We'd climb them, wouldn't we? We'd climb them to get around in. It's worth noting that we've seen a couple of wire-to-wire
green flag trainers.
Winners. Marcel Ciem and Alejandro Canizares both led from start to finish. Yeah. And there's Masters places up for grabs for a number of the contenders as well, which might bring its own added pressures, perhaps.
There's a few, isn't there? I remember Marcel Ciem, when he went wire to wire, it seemed all week they were saying that he's got to keep going to win and to get in the Masters, and he did, and he won, and then he got knocked out, didn't he? He went from something like 49th, he had to be in the top 50.
Oh, yeah.
Two people knocked him out in America that night.
Wow.
Right.
So I presume the European Tour's got a little list, website's got a little list of who needs to.
He's one that's got.
He can win. He can get in there with a win. Tommy Fleetwood with a win.
He's a good player these days, CM, yeah.
Levy needs something like a tied second. So. It's an extra incentive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I've just got the one pick for this event.
What about you, Dave?
I'm laughing. I've got one, and I've just looked at Dave's sheet, and it might well be the same man.
Is it the same man?
You don't cover up your sheet there very you well, Dave.
Sorry, I'll hide this in future.
Well, the player that you both got, I'll go first, because the player you both got is the one I've... No, it isn't. Was very high on my list. I'm not going to reveal him and let one of you two guys do that, but I've gone for Julian Kane as my only pick in this event. The Frenchman, who has two wins on tour.
Can we just say, anyone listening, they might look at it and they'll say, do you mean Quesney or
Quesney? Yes.
If you're going literally on what he looks like,
because, or Julien, even. Yeah.
I've heard it. Kane Khan.
Yeah. It is Kane, isn't it? But I understand from the first few events when we recorded the podcast,
we debated it
a few times.
Just in case anyone's looking down for some C-A-N-E and it begins with a Q.
No, it's a very fair call. He missed the cut last week in the Tashwain Open, and God knows how you say that properly. But he was top 10 in the other African event the week before, decent form before that, top 10 on his last visit to this course. I like greens in regulation, and particularly putting on this course. So he fits the bill on both of those numbers for me. So, and he's a winner. You know, I like guys who can win. My long list on this event was incredibly long. There are a lot of players who kind of tick the right criteria, but most of them are probably just about right in the market. I thought Kane at 50s offered a little bit of value. So he was the one that caught my eye. Now reveal what your joint pick is.
Yeah, Dave, I'll let you lead off.
What should we do a name? David
Howell. There you go.
That's good. Like Anton Deck.
40-1, David Howell.
Yes. I'm sure we've come up with the same reasoning, but obviously it being described as a pure links, David Howell won the Dunhill Links, didn't he, 2013?
Yeah.
He's done well on this course before, came eighth a couple of years ago. That same year he won the Dunhill Links. Played well in the Open, you know, on obviously Links course 2007, I think he was seventh. Yeah. And he showed up really well, didn't he, the other week? Was it Joe? Where was he runner-up? Joburg?
He was Joburg.
And then he's had some good other results in those South African events. And he's just playing well, isn't he? He seems to be settled.
He's on my last four, I have to say, strangely enough, yeah.
Seems to be his price hasn't really contracted despite his good performances. So I think to see 40s again when I was kind of going, oh, he's going to be...
And again, it's not a grade A field, is it? Some good players in there. But I agree, 40 is not a bad price for him.
I think his mix of course and current form, you could easily have seen him at, you know, 35 or 30s, 28s.
Comparable to like a Horsey or a Fisher or someone, isn't he, in a lot of ways? So shorter in the market.
Yeah, those two guys, Horsey and Fisher, look underpriced to me, whereas Howell looks bang on the money at 40s, even a little bit of value there. Because
put that up, there's a little bit of value as you're picking it.
That's a fair point, Mike. I think the venue will suit, though. Just to go back to,
because he's a bad price.
Just to go back to something you said about the putting, when Howell gets going, he can really roll the ball well. He puts brilliantly, doesn't he? And if he's on with the driver, I think this course will suit him. We've seen with that eighth, it does suit him quite well, and I like 40-1 David Howell
as well. You think he's you know, when he puts, he sort of has that slightly strange wide. You think that's kind of good for windy conditions, don't you? You're bracing yourself. It was sort of good for Harrington when he won in Florida when it was windy. I think it seems to be quite an effective way of handling it in the wind. Yeah.
The weather doesn't look that bad, does it? Looking at the advanced weather forecast, it doesn't look like we're going to have a lot of wind this week, does it?
I think on the last day it might pick up a bit. The one I saw, that was maybe looking a couple of days ago, though. But I think the main thing is it's not going to be like Madeira. Mm. It's sunny all week. I mean, it's in Morocco.
We'll get the 72 holes in, won't we, here? Which is good.
Just to turn off from the Howell-a-thon for a moment, were there any other players that you fancied?
Yeah, a couple. I mentioned last week Kevin Phelan, who's in the field this week.
He was 2 under, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was 2 under.
Yeah, in the round he did play, he did well enough, didn't he, to think, this is a guy who's...
I'm just... he's 50-1, which I think's fair enough. Missed the cut here last year, which is a bit of a negative, but I talked in depth about his talent last week, and he ranks 12th in driving accuracy on tour this season, 34th in greens in regulation, which shows you how well he's hitting the ball, and he tied second in Joburg as well, so hopefully that's a good form link for this week. And the other guy, a massive prize, Mike, that I thought was tempting but not quite tempting enough, was David Lipsky. at 100-1.
I've written him down.
I
agree.
I just think that he's maybe not driving the ball well enough at the moment, looking through his stats, but he showed that with his winning Kronz, which is a quirky venue where you've got to keep the ball in play, that he can handle those sort of conditions, and it wouldn't surprise me if he bounced back to his best this week. So those may be a couple.
He caught my eye, dude. He definitely did. Robert Carlson's a player that I thought I'd given up on, and I couldn't do him this week, but he finished, I think, 11th here last year, and he fits a lot of the right criteria for here, and he's a reasonable price for a quality player. Just worry about him when the gun goes to his head nowadays, though. He just seems to mess up, doesn't he, when he gets close. He's a big price when you look at some of the players short than him in the market. Rafael Cabrera Bayo's got some good form here, as has Pablo Larrazabal, but they're both just a little short in the market. Larrazabal in particular was interesting, but at 25s...
He's not played for 6 weeks either.
No, that doesn't put me off, though.
Doesn't,
to be fair. No.
Slightly putting me off, thinking maybe you could get him in running after a round.
Possibly,
something.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely be looking at running this event, Dave, with the weather in mind and a couple of other things as well. So I've only had one bet, but those two were definitely close. And Lipsky, and the one player that definitely is on my mind until he... that I can't back him this week, but Matteo Manassero is something like 150. He's playing dreadfully, but he's too good. He's the best, most talented player in the field, and he's 150-1. But he's not playing like that, obviously. I'm convinced he'll be back, and I think he'll win majors. So.
He's tinkering, isn't he?
He's tinkering, so because he can let... I've looked through his form figures for the last few years, and he does tend to play well in... he builds up towards form. I don't think he's going to be one of these that will win out of the blue.
Yeah.
I think he'll get a 30th and a 20th, then he'll start. You'll know when he's coming good, I think, hopefully, before those nasty odds compilers know. just look at this field and his price. And his last outing here, I think he was sixth of it, if my memory serves me correct. But he'll be back.
Mm. Okay. Who was close for you, Dave?
Definitely Griot. Obviously, lost that five-man playoff in Puerto Rico, but he's 22s. That's kind of
it's short for a non-winner, isn't he? That's the... Yeah. Yeah.
He came 11th on his only crack here, and I think the course definitely suits him. He's a really good iron player, isn't he? And always hits lots of greens.
Yeah.
But 22s is not giving anything
away. You can wait for
away.
Him to win, I think, can't you? And once he wins, I could see him flourishing. But yeah.
The other one I wanted to back, but I've really been headed off at the pass with his odds, was Matt Fitzpatrick. I think he should do really well on a sort of short course.
Yeah.
You look at his greens and reg figures the last two tournaments, really, really good. Mm. He was fifth in the South African Open, then kind of just went to pieces a bit. But young player, that happens. And he came back with a 15th in the Tshwane, however we're saying it. I just think there's a real sort of pointer. But he's 66. I mean, maybe that might look good come the end of the week. Yeah, but yeah. I was thinking maybe three figures before I would pull the trigger on him.
Right, yeah.
Okay, shall we move on?
Why not?
Yeah, let's have a look at the Valero Texas Open then. And Jordan Spieth heads the betting here at 8-1. Dustin Johnson is 9-1. Jim Furyk and Jimmy Walker, both 20s. Matt Kuchar and Zach Johnson, both 22s. Martin Keimer and Phil Mickelson, both 28-1. And it's 33's bar. And another quality event on the PGA Tour. They just keep coming. And this week, the professionals heading to Texas for this, and then the Houston Open, which precedes the 2015 Masters. And Mike, this is a venue at which they will be tested again, because TPC San Antonio is one of the most difficult tracks on the PGA Tour. Last year's scoring average just a shade over 73, making it the fourth toughest par 72 on the schedule, excluding the major championships. And it's a course that measures just over 7,400 yards. And I see this as a stern test off the tee, and the ability to keep your ball in play off the tee, I see as a key attribute at this venue.
Yeah, all of that is true, David. They're expecting some wins out there throughout the tournament, which always makes it more tough. So it's usually a single figure, below 10 under par wins this, usually. So that shows you that it's quite a tough test, which makes it interesting, I think. It's always a very good event for that reason. I prefer it when it's like that. It's more of a challenge. Less of a putting contest. So, yeah, it's a good field and a cracking event, as always.
As far as the event's concerned, Dave, from a betting perspective, you look back through the years of form since this venue took over in 2010. That was the first year. Conditions a little bit softer in 2010 when Adam Scott won with 14 under par. And then it's changed in terms of position in the schedule as well, which is something you've got to bear in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for a lot of these, the eye is very much on the Masters, isn't it? They're not disregarding this. They want to win this event. But, you know, if it goes, certainly someone like Mickelson is kind of a training run, isn't it, for the Masters? So you've got to kind of know, you know, slightly what their incentive is for this
week.
Do you
think that affects that many of them, David? It's probably, I'd say that's only your absolute top 10, maybe. The others are desperate to get a win, aren't they, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess they'll all have different incentives, but yeah. I guess a lot of people will bet the top 10 in the market, so you've got to sort of factor that in, I guess.
I think with Mickelson, he always likes to be in flying form, doesn't he, approaching a major championship, and maybe that's why he's decided this week to play this week and then play Houston at Redstone and then play the Masters. Just get a bit of a run and get a bit of momentum going, because Mickelson's a player that wants to be in... obviously they all want to be in tip-top shape, but he feels the best way for him to get in form is by playing competitive golf, I think.
Yeah, he needs to find a bit of form, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's not putting well enough for this event or for Augusta at the moment, so he does need to do something, I would guess.
Couple of picks for me. Mm-hmm. Mr. Grenham?
Three.
Three picks. And Mr. Tindall?
I'll say two.
Mike, you lead off then.
I'll go first. My first pick is a Texan, although not all of my picks are, but Ryan Palmer's my first pick. Mm. In truth, he tends to play other Texan events better than this one, but he's in great form, and I like ball strikers in this event. You know, people on that very important ball striking stat. He's 31st this season on that figure, and also the second stat that really catches my eye always in this tournament is proximity to the hole, where he's top 20 this season, Palmer. So I'd like it. My one worry about him is his accuracy off the tee, even though he's got good ball striking, isn't as good as it could be. He's not hitting as many fairways from the tee as he should. That's something that could be a slight worry, but that's my only worry, because on every other stat, he's putting well, he's striking the ball well, and he's in cracking form with the second in the Phoenix, 10th in the Yamana, 12th in the Cadillac in recent runs. So a top 10 and a 15th here in the last 5 years Plays very well in his native Texas, as I say. Possibly better in some of the other tracks than here, but he still has some good form here, as you've seen. I think Ryan Palmer's ready to win again, so I'm going to give him a go.
33-1, Ryan Palmer. Loves playing in the wind as well, doesn't he?
Most definitely. Palmer. As most Texans do, to be fair. It's a bit of a cliche, but it's, it is a, you know, they're used to it, aren't they?
33-1, Ryan Palmer. Do you want to go next, Mr. Tindall?
40-1, Brendan Todd. As Mike kind of alluded to, certain players do very well in Texas, and you look at Todd's record in Texas, it's outstanding. The last four starts, he's got a fifth, a win, a 43rd and a sixth. So three top, you know, win and two top sixes in his last four Texan starts. And I just, he actually said when he won the Byron Nelson, he actually said, I think dry and windy suits my game. So, I mean, that's what you get in Texas, isn't it, basically?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's no surprise to see him repeat those good performances.
Courses are hard out because it's windy as well. Yeah. It suits that kind of, it's not just about the wind, is it? It's the way that the courses play as well.
And if you look at his current form, he's kind of bubbling under. Lots of top 25s. I think he was 10th at Pebble. He just looks like a player who might be ready to put in a big one. And I think Texas, you know, it was the perfect venue for that to sort of for him to come alive again. And I thought 40-1, yeah, I thought that was fair given his latest form.
Talking about putting in a big one, we never mentioned Dave's.
Well, I was going to
big tip. Did we
each way into that?
Were you?
Yes.
Yeah. Go on, then.
Because if you ask me my second tip,
yeah,
it's your man,
Matt Jones.
Matt Jones. So let's stop and pause and pat Dave on the back.
Dave, well done, Dave, for your what price was your last week?
Yeah, it was 100-1. Which
100-1, and he finished.
He finished second, didn't he? In the end, or tied? Was it tied second in the end?
You don't know because you were watching Barcelona versus Real Madrid, weren't you?
I was watching Barcelona versus Real Madrid, and then I saw your tweet and I thought I better check the scores. I knew he was running into a place.
Once
anyway.
The place when he was safe.
Second and third's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he had a chance until every hole that put, didn't he?
He
really did.
Yeah.
But yeah, great pick that, Dave. And you're picking him this week,
are you,
Dave?
I'll pick him again because when he spoke afterwards, he said his coach had just come over from Australia and he seems to always play well when his coach has just come over.
Right.
So I thought that's a good
little Dave obviously knew that last week and didn't tell us. Kept that to himself.
Yeah. But what, I mean, Dave obviously picked him on current form before last week, so you add in that.
Yep.
What was it 3-14-7 now or something that he's got? So he's really one of the form horses. And I always think in Texas, if you have an Aussie on your side, you're on the right lines.
I picked an Australian, one of my three picks, yeah.
Well, good stuff, yeah. Five of the last 16 winners of the Houston were Aussies, two of the last five here, including Bowditch. Mm. Adam Scott won last year's Colonial. Jason Day's first win was at the Byron Nelson. There's a lot of Aussie players do for the obvious reason. It's a bit like Australia, isn't it? Windy, dry, hard and bouncy.
Yeah.
So it was almost a kind of, well, who's the best Australian I could go for this week? And I couldn't really get past him.
Okay.
Couldn't really get past...
Two tips in one there, Dave. Well done.
Yeah.
Segued in beautifully.
There you go.
But I wish we were a bit remiss in not congratulating Dave earlier, weren't we?
Well, I knew we were going to come to
it. We'd get to it. Well, you knew because you were picking him, of course.
But Matt Jones...
I was being remiss then.
Stay on the Matt Jones horse.
I'm hoping you have a good week, Mr. Tindall, because my headline selection here is Brendan Todd. I know this is
been
like a love in this, isn't it?
He didn't even flinch when I
no, he didn't mention.
I thought I'd let you
don't
finish.
Play him at poker.
I agree with everything you said, and
don't play him at free lunch bets.
I won that.
last week. You got that one last week.
I've done two lunch bets with you so far, and I was told, "Oh, watch out for Kellner on the lunch bets."
Yeah, you were one.
Both two players of yours have missed the cut. Rubbish.
They have, but we're still one apiece, though, aren't we?
We are, but
yeah. It's a fair point.
I feared something better. Are we gonna? Well, we'll have one. Well, We might have one this week.
In addition to what you said, you look at his numbers here last year. I agree with everything that you mentioned about Brendan Todd, but he had the best weekend here last year as well.
68.
Yeah, and he was tied third in fairways hit at the golf course last season. Tied second in greens in regulation. Also putted well. And you look back to his performances last year, this is the time of season he got things going. Obviously, that win of the Byron Nelson following the Masters. And I think he's playing better at this point this season than he was last season.
Yeah.
So that augurs well for this week. And he's pretty short off the tee, isn't he? You look at his numbers off the tee.
Yeah.
He is a short hitter. But Brendan Todd.
Brilliant short game, hasn't he?
It doesn't really matter that much here, does it, either?
It doesn't matter at all here. Even though the golf course measures just under 7,500 yards, you think, wow, that's long. Got to remember there's an extra... It's for par 72, for starters.
Yeah.
And a lot of these par 5s on this golf course, unless you're the very longest of hitter, you can't reach them anywhere.
Yeah.
A couple on the front nine are over 600 yards, so take Dustin Johnson maybe and Jimmy Walker out of the reckoning. A lot of these players are going to have to lay up anyway, so that negates the length advantage.
Plus, a lot of these short hitters always say, well, I like it when it's sort of hard and bouncy. Then they get some run out on their drives, don't they? So it kind of, you know, they add a bit of yardage anyway. And if everyone's going to miss greens, then, say this is one with minus nine. You always want someone who's good on the short game, don't you, to be saving pars all the time. So.
And Bowditch aside, Bowditch ranked 15th in driving distance last season. The last 3 years, littered with players outside the top 25 in driving distance, it doesn't look to be a factor at all this week. I think you want strong iron players and guys that drive the ball accurately. So I'm very happy with Brendan Todd at 40s. He's my headline pick. Mike, your second selection?
My second pick. He's actually my third pick, but... just for the sake of continuity, I'll mention my Australian pick. Doesn't actually fit these criteria that we've been talking about, but I'm going to give Jeff Ogilvie a run here because he hasn't done an awful lot this calendar year, but ended last calendar year very well with a win in the Barracuda and a second in the Deutsche Bank. Now, as a former US Open winner, he's got the attributes, hasn't he, to win an event like this where you've got to be accurate off the tee, get it on the greens in the right number. And I just... had a pretty strong gut feeling for him. I've noticed actually he's been reasonably popularly tipped by a few other people, which surprised me. I thought I'd be the only one on him this week. He's a player I like a lot, and I think it might just be his turn to come back to form back in Texas, as we know, that suits these Australians. 11th here last year when he was playing really not very well at all. 23rd on his previous outing at the track. I just have a feeling that this could be a week where Jeff Ogilvie comes back into contention and gives a real good account of himself at 150-1.
Good stuff. Yeah, I've got him marked down there, 150-1, Jeff Ogilvie.
Maybe it's that 11th flagged it up to people, but I just had him in mind for when it came back to Texas for the reasons stated. And
I always like that when someone is playing badly and yet this during that spell they had a good result finish. At a course.
You'd hope he'd do better this year, and if he does, he won't be far away.
Yeah.
150-1, Jeff Ogilvie, Mike's second selection. My second pick is Daniel Summerhayes, who I'm playing at 50-1 this week. A player I really like, and maybe that's persuaded me to go with him, despite only being 50s, because it looks just about, it's on the limit, 50-1, really. But he loves it here. Finished 7th in 2013, 2nd last year. Does suit his game absolutely ideally, this venue. And he comes into this event with a little bit of form as well, which he hasn't done the previous two seasons, despite those top finishes here. Tied 17th at the Honda, followed that with a tie for 10th at the Valspar, before slightly disappointing in a tie for 55th in the Arnold Palmer. Very similar mould in terms of type of player as Brendan Todd, really. He'll keep the ball in play and rely on his wedge game here on the par 5s, which will hopefully pay off. And last season, tied for 2nd in greens in regulation at this venue. And he's a player that won't make many mistakes, which I think is key around a golf course as tough as San Antonio. So he was my second and final selection, Summerhayes at 50-1.
That leaves me with just the last one, doesn't it?
It does.
As I realise Dave did his two-in-one trick.
Yeah.
My final pick is another three-figure player, 100-1 shot, Kevin Chappell, who was second here in 2011 in a kind of a breakthrough performance just behind Brendan Steele. Interestingly enough, Brendan Steele's 40-1 this week and Chappell's 100-1. Now, Chappell has missed his last three cuts, which is a bit worrying, to be fair. But prior to that, was in decent form. Yeah, good finishes this 14-15 season at McGladrey, CIMB, Pebble Beach. So I'm hoping that the return to the, going towards the West Coast, getting away from Florida, didn't do very well in the Valspar or the Bay Hill events, will galvanise him and he'll be back to something like his best, because he really does fit the criteria I love for this event. He is a very good ball striker, was 11th on tour for that stat last year, and 11th for proximity to the hole, another, for me, very important stat in this event. I just think at 100-1, with good previous course form, and he was also 15th year before last in this event. I like Kevin Chappell here a lot at three figures. I think anything above 100-1 a year, you're in a good place. Yeah, he could bomb out. Obviously, three miscuts is a little bit worrying, but once he's back to... he's from California, and I'm hoping that Texas getting all the way back out across the country will help him, and he'll be bouncing back to form. I think he could go very well this week. Two top tens in US Opens to his name in the past. That tells you how
good he is. I'm just looking at his Texas form, and it seems he does well on differing Texas courses. Yeah. He's got 6th in Houston, 15th in this, 10th at the Crown Plaza last year.
Yeah, he plays well in Texas.
Yeah,
he does. I should have mentioned that, Dave, but that was in my thinking.
It's a bit of a Texas specialist.
He is a bit, yeah. He's a very good player in tough events. They suit him.
Yeah.
You lost throwing events.
Was he third? He was third, wasn't he, in Rory's US Open?
He was. He's top 10 twice in US Open. Yeah, so for quite a, not a heralded player, that's interesting.
I remember that. I'm glad you talked about the US Open. I remember that one well, actually.
He tipped him.
750s.
Tipped Kevin Chappell.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up, though, Dave. It's very kind of you.
No, thanks to you, Dave, for bringing it up.
Yeah, I didn't mention it.
Who came closest for you then, Dave, apart from your two selections?
I had a look at Pat Perez, because he's another, we keep going on about who plays well in Texas. He's got lots of top sort of 12s, top 10s, top 15s in Texas. Done particularly well at this course. He's got a 5th, 11th, 22nd, and he was 4th at Pebble on a course where he'd done well before. So maybe, he likes the same sort of courses. Mm. But yeah, he was just in that category. Well, who plays well in Texas at a three-figure price? Pat Perez. Mm. So,
couple of guys. Outsider. Yeah, Pat Perez. A couple of guys that I had in mind that we've not mentioned, been through Ogilvy, Matt Jones. Brendan Steele was one.
Yeah.
Winner in 2011 here, 4th when defending, and he's playing well at the moment. I just wonder, he's not driving the ball very accurately, which I think is a little bit of a concern at this course, but he looks pretty solid to me at 40s. Jim Furyk, of the guys at the top end of the market, he is only 20-1, but if you're looking for a top 10 or a top 20 bet this week, you can do worse than Furyk. He's had a couple of outings here, 3rd and 6th in the last 2 years. And you look back through his record, the last 31 events, he's been top 20 in 23 of them, which is remarkable. Testament,
23 out of 31.
Yeah, which is remarkable, isn't it? Testament to his consistency. Not a market we have, the top 20 market, but be looking at maybe a top 10 play on Furyk, definitely. And the only other one that I like the look of, Camilo Villegas at 100-1.
Yeah, have a look at him. Yeah.
I think this course could suit him, and he's playing better golf at the moment. The sort of venue he'd do well at. So those three guys in mind anyway, Mike.
Martin Laird is the player I don't want to win. Because he has won it here before, and I've mentioned him, and I put a Twitter bet upon him last week. I think, he could play well, but he's only 40-1, and his play last week didn't really justify that. I didn't think I expected bigger, so he is the player I don't want to win. Just to mention a couple of very big odds, Lucas Glover is someone who catches my eye away back to a tough event. He's another US Open guy, isn't he? And just as a glimpse of him coming back to form, his stats are pretty decent on the key stats. Ball striking and proximity, again, I'm sorry to go on about the same stats, but on those, you give him a chance, and he's massive odds.
He's got a bit of touch of the yips, though, hasn't he, with the putter?
Yeah,
he's missing inside from inside of 4 feet with an alarming regularity at the moment.
Well, that's probably why he isn't getting his finishes, because everything else about his game is pretty decent. And probably more realistically, Sung Yul No, I thought, was a little bit of a big price. He's a winner on tour, let's not forget, last season, and has two top 20s in the last 3 years here in this event. So I just another big treble figure odds player that might outperform his place in the market.
He's 125-1, Sung Yul No. We've heard from Mike then, Martin Laird, the player he doesn't want to win this week. Dave Tindall?
Well, very sort of obviously, and we've not mentioned him, just because when he did win at the back end of last year, and then he went and won another one by a mile, Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, we've not talked about Spieth, have we?
Was he 8-1?
Yes, he is.
I mean, first glance you think, that's... If I'd been an odds compiler, that's what I would have put him in at. But, he could hack up. I mean, he's from Texas, isn't he? So he's playing in his home state. What was he, 10th in this?
10th last year.
Last year. it would seem very, very obvious, wouldn't it, if he just beat what is kind of not the greatest field, really.
If he is going to become McIlroy or what Woods used to be or close to that, 8-1 would look a big price, yeah, wouldn't it? Because they would never start at that price, would they, when they're in such good form? It's just whether he is that good enough. He's proof of the pudding.
In a couple of years and he was doing what he's doing, he might be 4-1 or 7-2. But
Do you prefer him to Dustin Johnson then at a very similar price this week?
I would, because it's DJ's first look at the course, isn't it? So you're not quite sure what you're getting.
Yeah, I agree as well. I'd rather be with Spieth. The guy that I don't want to win this week is probably Brendan Steele, in all honesty, at 40-1. Came close to going for Steele. Let's recap the selections then. Dave, you're picking the Trophy Hassan.
Yeah, so point each way, David Howell.
Yep, at 40-1. And I'm going to point each way, David Howell.
I'll just
40-1.
Half a point each way, Julian Kwezniqane, whatever
he's called. And in the PGA event, the Valero Texas Open, Dave?
Yeah, a point each way on Brendan Todd and a point each way on Matt Jones.
Both at 40-1. I'll play a point each way, Brendan Todd at 40s. And a point, you better have a good week, Dave. And a point each way, Daniel Summerhayes at 50-1, Mike.
I will go a point each way, Ryan Palmer, and a point each at 33s, and Kevin Chappell at 100s. And half a point each way, Jeff Ogilvie at 150.
Superb. Thank you, chaps, and thanks to everyone for listening to this week's golf podcast. Remember, you can follow us all on Twitter at D Kellner, at M Grenham, and at Dave Tindall Golf. And myself, Mike, and Dave will be back for Houston next week as we move ever closer to the Masters 2015. Best of luck with your betting this week on the Trophy Hassan II and the Valero Texas Open, and we'll speak again very soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.